So namaste and welcome. It's good to see everyone here and those that haven't been here for a while. Good to see you back. Learning process. I just wanted to say this on here about the Vipassana. We've just spoken with it a little bit off the mic, but I really, really, really advocate that you go and at least one time spend with the course, the 10 days, so you can learn how to do this process of sitting and doing this meditation and this introspection and really being able to learn how to sit with things, okay? Very important, very important. It can only aid and help you in your process as you're processing Kundalini, okay? So, yeah, I would like to really hear that everyone has taken advantage and gone to a Vipassana course and spent the time. Because really this is what I'm trying to get people to enter into, and learning how to be in the moment and how to sit with things and not how to run away with the mind and create more and more scenarios, but to be able to really cut through it and get to the bottom of it. Okay. So we have a few satsang questions today. What are the limitations of intellectual understanding or knowing? Well, just so happens that we have, ta-da, something was just written online today about that I was going to share anyway, so. Flow of the universe, what can we say? But this is somebody that's new on one of my sites, this guy, Oze Rinpoche. And he is supposedly had an enlightened experience. And so we were discussing what's the difference between enlightenment and somebody that's posing questions out of intellect, the knowing out of intellect. He was saying, this inner truth we speak of is an inner experience. One who experiences this truth is worthy to speak, for he was and is that truth. In his experience, and by this, in his words, he is worthy to speak of that experience of truth. And when he's speaking of truth, he's speaking of realization. And I told him, I said, well, people are confused by this statement as well. As many experience much phenomena in lower samadhis and confuse it with this truth. This inner truth is not something separate to be seen and experienced. It is the primal seed of life that implodes the illusions of conditioned mind and the whole H-O-L-E, me, dynamic. So he said, one who has not experienced this inner truth and speaks on such matters is making opinion, mostly heard or read from books. He does not know, he speculates, the differences one knows by experience and the other one speaks and identifies. Experiencing truth and identifying with truth are two different poles. I said, for most, there is a me speaking out of knowing about a subject or out of ideas or hearsay which has been accepted and adopted as a philosophical stance. Perhaps there has been a lower experience of union or intense experience within phenomena, which then again gets bounced off of a personalized self that imposes on it all the skewings of conditioned mind. which in turn takes on the colorizations of their mental inflections. This is not speaking from truth, but speaking with ideas about truth or truths. One that has imploded the mind of self, dissolving identification and separation into the absolute of is, speaks from this pure awareness that has put an end to the experiences of phenomena as being truths. There are relational truths which run the minds of those within duality. Then there is the absolute truth, which is unchanging and unwavering, stilled point of absolute is. This truth, this is, does not come and go. It pervades, supports, and yet is always distinct and untouched by the world of Shakti or mind, which is the prism of duality. Most are navigating and only know this prism of mind. They have not traversed it to the clarity of absolute. This clarity is the cornerstone and firm foundation which is not moved and brings the peace that passes understanding. It is the rivers of living waters that keep one refreshed and without seeking or thirst or confusion ever. So, what are the limitations of intellectual understanding or knowing? That's it. Intellectual understanding or knowing comes about by the prism of mind, which only sees and relates things in duality. So it has no cornerstone, no foundation, no centering point. Everything is in flux. And when you've adopted things, you know, from reading what other sages or saints have said, then you're talking about a subject, but you don't know what is the source of that. You don't know it, you know, it's not known directly. Therefore, it becomes a philosophical stance, something that you're trying to understand and trying to, you know, relate to. Absolute blows out relation. Okay? It's not something to relate to, it simply is. Okay. So that's the difference in realization versus intellectual knowing. That's why I'm recommending Vipassana, right? Because it helps to get you to a point of stilling. It can help you take you to a point of stilling and pull away these coverings and layers. Okay. So you can get to eventually that source rather than these projection and ideas about source, what it is, maybe what it is, or what, you know, what are these truths in my life versus not, or, you know. Why is there the necessity of left-handed blessings, and what are their value? Well, the left-handed blessings, the value of karma is that you don't get away with anything, you know? You don't get away with anything. It's kind of like having, this strict parent that only wants your good. I mean, God's not out to punish people with karma. You know, that's not what it is. Karma comes about because at the center point of everyone, every being, is that absolute, that truth, that perfection. So when you're going against that perfection, what happens? You're manifesting the shadow. So the shadows will come up and whack you. And hopefully then it becomes a left-handed blessing, because then you get a chance to question, why is this coming up, or why is this happening? Okay. So left-handed blessings are there, you know, the difficulties in life are there to get you to question why are these difficulties in place? Help to shake you to get a clue, to start searching more deeply and to change things, to want to change it for the better. Okay? What does it mean to really surrender absolutely and unconditionally, and why is it necessary? Because when there is not surrender, it's ego. Okay? It's that ego that's kicking against the goad and doesn't want to go, you know, with the natural flow. If one is going with the natural flow, then that is surrender. But it's ego that stands up and says, I want it my way and I want it better and I want what's for my benefit and I, you know. Okay. Surrendering is just coming into that natural flow, into the sattvic way. Neutral. This way of neutrality, of coming to that still point. Because when you come to that still point, that's when everything is revealed. Okay. When you have this I that steps up, that I want to create and I want to, you know, be the creator and the sustainer of my world, and I want to, I. Sometimes that eye is blind. Okay. In surrender, we're letting go. And we're waiting. Sometimes it takes that process of stilling, that process of not knowing, of just witnessing and see what comes. Okay. You're not going to try to manage or try to make something come about a certain way. In surrendering, you're trusting the universe, okay? There's an element of trust that comes in, an element of going and knowing that what comes is going to be for the best, okay? Surrendering is honoring and respecting what's coming about because it's there for some reason. Okay. Yes, surrender is never easy. We always want to be in charge, you know. And sometimes when you start to surrender, one has to step back and have that patience and wait and see. And that's difficult for people. That's why, again, the Vipassana is good, because you are, for 10 days, having to surrender, having to follow this guidance. And you're not going to do it your way. You're going to sit there and surrender and let come. It's going to come as it will. And you're going to just sit there and observe. And surrender. And when the pain comes, you surrender. And you go deeper. And you try to find that center point of it. And let go of the fighting it. The let go of the, you know, resistance to it. And when you can let go of that resistance and that fighting it, then you find the still point. And all of a sudden, the pain just evaporates. Internally and externally, what comes, comes. This is like being in the moment. What comes, comes, and you deal with it as it is, without projecting and laying over, well, I think it's this, or I think it's that, or, you know, trying to figure out some reason for it and how can I change it, and how can I manage it, and how can I, you know, you just deal with it as it is in that moment. I think, you know, this is a lot of times what Gangaji tries to get people to do. She'll tell them, just sit with it. And what is it you fear? Is it the fear of death, or is that fear, well, this loneliness there, or this? And she'll tell you, just really go into it. Is that not what she says? Exactly. What she's trying to do is get you to instant vipassana. Okay. It's exactly what the technique is. To sit with it. Don't resist it. Don't fight it. Just feel it. Don't identify with it. Just let it be there and then go deeper. Then go deeper than that. So what she's trying to do is walk people through instant vipassana. Okay. If you want to understand what Gangaji is doing, take the vipassana course. Okay. Because people, you know, have a wrong idea sometimes about when you say do self-inquiry. You know, it's not who am I and then we give our name, you know, because that's projections. Well, what is that name? Ah, what is that name? Good, now we get a starting point. Okay, can't just end it with a name. No, that means nothing. Okay, what's that? What is that name? What is that? I, yeah, we all have that same name, I. And this is why Sri Ramana would tell people, you know, you stop there. I, that's the first thought, you stop there. Don't go any further. He said, just keep I am, just keep I am in your mind. In other words, what he was trying to get people was to say, your first thought is I and you stop there. Don't go any further. Not I categorize this or I that or I whatever. Just stop with I. And let the rest fall away. So he was trying to get people to that point of staying at one place, and then even that drops away. Don't go any further than the next thought. Or whatever the first word that comes up in your mind is. Or the first cognition, I don't care what it is. Use that as a mantra for the day. And don't go any further than that first thought, first word, first instance that comes up. Stay with that for the day. Use that for your mantra for the day. Don't go any further. So I'm going to give you all that to do this week. The first word, the first thought, the first thing that rises in your mind in the morning, that's your mantra for the day. Don't go any further than that. Stop with that one first thought. Whether it's your name or whether it's I or whether it's you or whether it's damn. I don't care what it is. You just stay there. Don't go any further. Just stay there. The thing is to stop the mind, you know, to get the mind to stop before it starts off on a big tangent. You know, that's, you know, Ramana, sometimes they clean everything up. Tell him, sometimes they would come and he'd just say, shut up. Just tell him, shut up. You know, they clean it up and say, oh, he said, be still and be quiet and don't. No, he'd just tell him just flat out sometimes, shut up. Just sit there. And shut up. Be still. Stay with I. Stay with I am and don't go any further. Not I am this or I am that or I feel this or I feel that. Just stop right there. And then let that settle. And then go even deeper than that. Okay? Go to the root of that. That's what he was trying to get people to do. And he tried to make it as simple as he could. Just stop at I am. Don't go, you know. Stop at I. Not I want, I desire, I don't like, I feel, I hate, I this, I that. Quit categorizing. Just stop at I. And if you just sit with I long enough, then you'll go even deeper. You'll stop the I projections of, you know, all these other things. And you'll go even deeper. And that will fall away. As an I, as a self-limiting factor. So this is, you know, this is, like I said, the value of realization is when once you get there, you can see where these techniques are pointing to or what they're trying to get, you know. Each teacher has a different way of trying to get you, you know, to face that, to still, to stop, to confront, to not run away. So many people want to use the path as a way to run away and create, you know, pie in the sky and, you know, I only want to have the good feelings, and if I meditate, I should have this, or I should have powers, or I should have control. Then when they start meditating and all this stuff starts coming up, they wonder what's wrong. There's nothing wrong, because that's what it's designed to do. When you first start stopping and stilling, you're going to see the mind is just running away. Well, it's been doing that, but you just haven't been cognizant of it. Okay. So all of these practices are there to get you to stop creating so much more drama and to finally sit and confront the drama you have. Okay. Just sit with the drama you have. It's enough already. We don't need any more. And then we'll start to cut the knots of those dramas. If we sit with it long enough and we don't run away from it, and we actually have to see it and actually have to feel it and go into that pain 100% and not run away from it and confront it, we will find that every point of pain has a doorway somewhere into stillness on the other side. Okay. It's when we don't want to confront it that we continue to try to cover it over and mask it with something else. Okay, we just create more and more separate dramas. But on the path, eventually, that's what we come to. That's what I came to in my life, you know. The first cognition that this wasn't working was this cognition as to why I was getting these piercings done and all of this stuff. What I found out was that physical pain was easier to deal with than the emotional pain. I couldn't deal with the drama of the emotional pain. Therefore, I would get these piercings done, and that physical pain would mask it for a time. But the minute it started to heal over, all of a sudden this emotional pain came back. I finally got the cognition why it was being done. Well, this is not solving anything, okay? Duh. So I stopped. And finally, that was the point of finally starting to question what this pain was, what was holding it in place, who was holding it in place, and then I started to delve into why. Okay. But this can't be done just on a simple and intellectual level. You really have to dive into it and be willing to feel it before you can confront it enough to find out, am I this body, am I this mind, am I these emotions? And find out you are not any of those things. Okay. So it's a process of discovery. But if you don't want to do it the hard route like I did, through a lot of suffering for 20, 30 years of intense suffering, day in and day out, then I suggest Vipassana. It's a much quicker way to get clued into it rather than the way that I did it. 20 years. Oh, it's, yeah, 20 plus, more than that.
Day and night.
Day and night. Unstopping. Unending. Yeah. So do the Vipassana. Do most all people have hidden, unresolved pain they are not facing? I think we've just covered that. The answer would be yes. Only most, you know, this is why it's another left-handed blessing. When you really get the rug pulled out from under you, and that paint is point blank in your face and you cannot run away from it again, cannot so easily cover it over, then you have a point to start. Then you have the opportunity for release. Okay? Because you can finally see it. If you have a nominal life and you're going along and you're partying and whatever, and, you know, people are out partying and drinking and drugging, whatever, they keep covering it over. And they just haven't had enough point blank pain in their life that they're ready to let go and see that they're suffering. They'll still find ways to justify it. Oh, I'm not really suffering. It's just, you know, they'll still cover over. But when you finally get that rug pulled out 100% and you fall flat on your face and you can't move, then it's grace, because then you begin to look seriously. Okay. Then you have the chance to get out of it once and for all. Then you have the fortitude, no matter what it takes, you're going to do it. Because you can't stand one more moment of that suffering, intense, intense suffering. So it's a left-handed blessing. Okay. Not that I wish you all pain in your lives. Hopefully you get, you know, you start searching before it reaches that point. But in either case, no matter which way it is, eventually you come to a point of opportunity for liberation. So no matter how painful it is, stick with it. Don't mask, don't cover over again. Be willing to stay the course and face it, and then finally you can come out of it once and for all. Okay. So everyone here, I would like to see you all at some point in time. Please, please take a Vipassana course. Not that I'm trying to get rid of anyone. That's not what it's about. But it only furthers your understanding of the path and what it is to sit with meditation and sit with this contemplation and sit and confront these things in a beneficial manner. Because a lot of people have a lot of ideas about meditation, and what I want is people to have this introspection, to confront these things, not to use the meditation as a way to, again, divorce yourself from it. Some people can use meditation as another type of a covering. We don't want to do that. That's not what it's about. It's not about zoning out. You know, it's about being in the moment and seeing clearly what's taking place within and not hiding it, not running away from it, but getting to the root of it and cutting it once and for all. Do we have any more questions or comments? It was one of the techniques. The same thing, yeah, Buddha. Buddha sat with things. First he tried all the austerities and all of these things and found out that's not it. And you still see in India, you know, some of these guys doing all these austerities and tapas, tapasya, holding the arm up for 12 years or whatever until it withers and... Yeah, they get a lot of attention for it, but, you know, really, what are they confronting? Unless they, through that, which is, would be very painful, unless they really go into that pain, then it could have value. Okay. So, yeah, it was what Buddha used. It was that process of introspection. My process of introspection was a little bit different, but it was the same thing. It came out of confronting that pain finally and not covering it over by cluing in that, you know, I'm the one that's holding that pain in and what holds it in place. And that started the introspection, the very deep, deep, deep looking. I didn't do meditation to wig out and go to other planes and do all this other stuff. It was a process of being in the moment and being in introspection. This is why I've been giving you all the, you know, starting out with that breath. Become aware of the breath. And this is the first thing they will do in the Vipassana. Just become aware of the breathing. 100% your focus is there. It's not on these thoughts that are coming here and there. It's not on anything else, emotions coming up. Just become aware of the breath. Keep coming back to that. When the emotions get too much in that, again, they will tell you, come back to the breath. Let things subside. This is why when people are in the Kundalini experience and you have all these shifts, I say when it's fear arising, just feel it rather than putting the label on it, fear, and having a whole bunch of other dynamic. Just feel what the change is in the body. Okay? Just feel what that is. And don't label it. You'll see that it's a kind of a rush of adrenaline. So let's not put all the baggage on top of it. Okay? Let's just encounter what is there as it's there. And this is what Vipassana is there to teach you how to do. Encounter what is there as it's there. And sit there and witness it, and you can't run away from it. Okay, because if you're trying to do it in your normal daily life, what happens is, yeah, this stuff is coming up, but then you're trying to make it, well, it was because of this or because of that or, you know, this connection or that connection, or you're not really sitting with it, the full intensity of it. Because if you're sitting in the room and all this stuff is coming up, you can't blame it on anything. That has to do with this, or this guy cut me off, and therefore that's why this is happening, or, you know. you can't blame it on anything, and you know it all has to do with past. Or projection of future what-ifs, or whatever. So eventually you'll get clued in that most of all of this drama comes up with attachment to the past, or projecting into the future. But you're really very seldom living in what's now without having some kind of a colorization and skewing and spin put on it by this other stuff. So if you're sitting with Vipassana, eventually you're going to get this. Okay. And once you start to get it, then you can start to finally cut these knots. Okay. So you can really get it.
And that's the
can be, if you go deep enough. Mm-hmm. Can be. Took Buddha all the way. But we have to be willing to put the time in. The time, the attention, the intention. If you really get what they're teaching at the Vipassana, you'll be able to do this throughout the day if you stay in the moment and keep coming back to the breath. And every time the mind starts running away, you can keep bringing yourself back to now, back to the moment. Okay? It gets you ready for ongoing. You can use it ongoing then. So at this, we'll go ahead and take our break. There is tea out there. Please put on a pot of tea or coffee or whatever you want out there. And then we will come back for some sitting so that people can prepare for Vipassana. Namaste, and thank you for coming.